Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In our final conversation with Barbara Jones Brown, we'll talk about who deserves the most blame for the massacre. Is it John D. Lee, Brigham Young, or could it be leaders of the Iron County Militia? Barbara will answer that question in our final conversation. Check it out. I'd also like to remind you to please sign up for our newsletter. Go to gospeltangents.com/newsletter, and you can find out about our latest guests. Check out our conversation. All right, so it sounds like Brigham was lied to initially, and the trial didn't happen for about 18, 20 years, I'd say.
Yeah, John D. Lee's.
So at what point did Brigham Young change his mind and decide that Mormons were involved and John D. Lee specifically?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, so he's lied to repeatedly for years. But, you know, federal investigators, they're investigating and they find out the truth of the story pretty quick, very close to what we know about the massacre today. So Indian Superintendent Jacob Forney goes south in 1859 and he does his own investigation, just asking around. And he gives an account of what he's discovered, and it's very close to what we know today. Judge John Cradlebaugh, who also is there in 1859, does his own investigation. He has witnesses. He goes down to Cedar City, and he has witnesses come and knock on his door in the middle of the night and tell him things. He doesn't name names of who comes to him, I think perhaps to protect their safety, but he figures out what happens as well, pretty close to the actual story. There's some details that were wrong, but both of them have a pretty good understanding of what happened. So if these federal investigators know that early that it wasn't just Indians, it was Mormons.
So 1859 is probably the earliest anybody was super clear on it? Is that safe to say?
Well, of course, the perpetrators knew in 1857 what happened.
Right.
But again, in terms of investigations, the earliest records we have of investigations showing that they had figured out closely what had happened was in 1859. Then you have like Mormon investigators, Amasa Lyman and George A. Smith, who look into it, and they go with the Mormon version of it was an all-Indian massacre. So is that perception? You know, is it cover-up? Is it perception of not being willing to believe the worst, that your own people actually did such a heinous crime? Is it wanting to cover up? Who knows? But what we know is the non-Mormons who didn't have that need to excuse their own people, because this is their own, not their own people, they pretty much get to the bottom of it pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, to me that's a little bit surprising, because there would be a reason to hide from the non-Mormons, right? What really happened? Why wouldn't the Mormons have lied and still tried to blame it on the Indians?
Right, yeah, which they do. And so what happens with church leaders who go south from Salt Lake City, they're listening to the church leaders of the South, who are the very perpetrators of the massacre. So they're getting that story. They're listening to them. They trust these men. And that story is easier to believe, right?
Yeah.
That story is easier to believe. Whereas the non-Mormons, they're getting witnesses who aren't necessarily the church leaders down south, who are coming to them privately and quietly and telling them. Jacob Hamlin starts learning more too as he's gathering these 17 children. He starts hearing more and more as well. And Hamlin is traveling with Forney through southern Utah, helping him. So, yeah, but the non-Mormons who don't have any kind of a need to believe, these aren't their people, so they can, it's easier for them to accept the fact.
So it sounds like some rank and file people were telling what was happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the federal investigators were getting a pretty good idea as early as 1859.
Yes.
Brigham Young still believing his church leaders. At what point does Brigham Young change his mind?
Yeah. So and this is the other thing with Young is he's trusts his own men implicitly, and he does not trust outsiders. That's long been ingrained in him.
Yeah.
After the experiences of the early church, he does not trust outsiders, and he thinks that anyone who are against the Mormons are anti-Mormon. So he doesn't trust other stories. So slowly over time, though, as more, you know, rank and file start to, it starts to become undeniable that there was white men's involvement. And so he starts to come to believe that John D. Lee and Isaac Haight were involved. Now, at this time, he doesn't have civil authority. He just has church authority, right? Because he's not the governor anymore. And so he excommunicates John D. Lee and Isaac Haight eventually. And then...
Would it be safe to say that those were the two most responsible people for the massacre?
I think William Dame is also responsible because he gave the final okay to go ahead and carry it out as Iron County Militia Commander. Philip Clayton Smith was clearly very much involved and clearly received much of the spoils. We know from a clerk of Philip Clayton Smith that he was pilfering tithing funds and stealing from the people long before the massacre.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. That he had that history. And then John M. Higby was also very responsible. He was the one who came up with the plan for decoying the immigrants out. So, but yeah, Lee and Haight bear major responsibility. Absolutely. Forgot where I was.
Yeah, I was just asking who had the biggest responsibility there, would you say? So
I would say those five men.
Those five men. So Higby came up with the plan. Haight and Dame were the two stake presidents that signed off on the plan.
Well, it was more in their... Yeah, they were two stake presidents. They were also militia, the top of the militia.
Yeah, top of the militia. Mm-hmm. Lee...
Lee was the one... He was there at the first account. He received much of the spoil. He murdered people himself. It may be that Young... it was also easier for Young to accept the Mormon settlers' version of events, because he knew he had put in place that strategy of encouraging raiding of cattle, and he may have feared that, oh gosh, did my policy, did that strategy in wartime contribute to this? End in this explosive episode. And I think we know he did. He feared that he would come to the same fate that Joseph Smith had, that he would be placed in prison and murdered while in prison.
So how much blame does Brigham Young deserve then?
I agree with Juanita Brooks' conclusion that his rhetoric before the massacre was very dangerous. You know, privately, he was writing and saying, I don't want any blood shed in this conflict. But he was definitely whipping people up into a state of hysteria. Now, what was he saying? He was saying, we will burn our homes. We will go into hiding places. But stock up on arms and ammunition But he was using words like, you know, we will submit to oppression no more. And if they come to harm us again, I say slay them. And, you know, using language like that. So that was dangerous rhetoric. Very dangerous rhetoric. And then this policy of encouraging Indian interpreters, Mormon interpreters who spoke Native American languages, having them encourage and lead raiding of immigrant travel, immigrant raiding of cattle was a contributing factor, yes.
So
did he order the massacre? No. But did these policies and things he was doing create an atmosphere, create a situation in which the massacre could occur, yes.
So in today's world, if sounds like you think that the main five contributors are John DeLee, Higby, Dame, Klingon Smith, who am I missing? Who's the fifth one?
Higby, Lee, Klingon Smith, Dame, and Haight.
Okay. So those are probably the five most responsible. Would Brigham Young be an accessory to that with his rhetoric?
I don't think he's an accessory to the crime. I think I look at President Donald Trump today and some of his rhetoric that he uses. Did he tell people to do what happened at Charlottesville? No. But did his rhetoric make people think it was okay to do what they did? Some people think it was okay to do what they did at Charlottesville? Probably. So would you call Trump an accessory to any crime? Would you call Trump an accessory to the crime that occurred at Charlottesville when you had, you know, one of these people drive a car into protesters? No, I wouldn't call Trump an accessory to that crime, no. But did his rhetoric encourage some people to think that was okay? Possibly.
Mm-hmm. So it's reckless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I based on all the sources I've looked at, I don't think Young intended a massacre, a slaughter, bloodshed, because he says again and again, I don't want any bloodshed in this conflict. So, but was it a natural consequence of all of these events taking place? Yes. But the main thing I want to stress is the emigrants who so tragically were killed in Mount Meadows bear no responsibility for what happened to them. They did not deserve this, and that's one of my main messages I'm always trying to debunk, or the messages I'm always trying to share to debunk the belief that, oh, they had it coming to them. When I hear anything like that, it just makes my blood boil because
they didn't have it coming to them.
They were innocent people, and very tragic, unfortunate episode, darkest episode in Mormon history and arguably in Utah history.
So. All right. Well, thank you, Barbara, for spending so much time and letting me come to your home. So I really appreciate that. So do you have any last words before we go?
So I was the content editor of Massacre at Mountain Meadows that came out in 2008, published by Oxford University Press, and I am now working as a co-author with Rick Turley to write the sequel to that volume one. And so that's how I've learned so much about the aftermath of the massacre, is working on that volume. So that volume picks up on September 11th, 1857 in Salt Lake City, where Jacob Hamlin is being sealed by Brigham Young to his second wife, Priscilla Lovett. It picks up there and then goes all the way through the trial and execution of John DeLee and the death of Brigham Young. So I have learned more about the I've learned a great deal about the massacre and motive and what happened by looking at what happened after the massacre.
Oh, yeah.
So I hope that it will be just as enlightening for others.
Yeah. Now, when does that book come out?
So it will also be published by Oxford University Press, and we're putting final touches on it, and then it will go to the press, and once a press has a book, it typically takes up to 18 months.
Oh, really? That long?
Well, they send it to peer reviewers and then get the feedback from peer review, and then we would address that. And so, yeah, it's for an academic press, it takes.
Oh, I was thinking this was going to come out soon. It's going to be another 2 years,
soon.
Probably.
Well, yeah, hopefully less than that. We'll see.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that.
Thank you, I am too.
Looking forward to it being over, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, all right. So it's really nice to get a good preview really early. So, all right. Well, thanks again for listening or for talking here on Gospel Tangents.
Thanks, Rick.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Barbara Jones Brown. I hope you learned as much as I did. It was a really fun conversation. Thanks a lot, Barbara. I really appreciate it. I also would like to encourage you to keep an eye out for her upcoming book with Richard Turley. And oh, by the way, we have an upcoming interview with Richard Turley here in a couple of weeks. So it will also be on the Mountain Meadows Massacre. In our next interview, we're going to be talking to Michael Marquardt. He's kind of an unsung hero in church history circles. But at any rate, most of you know that the church was organized in Fayette, New York. But Michael has come across some early church periodicals that say that it was organized someplace else.
And, of course, the early Church of Christ did publish in the Evening and Morning Star, the first church periodical, that was organized and established in Manchester on April 6th. And that's also where you find where it mentions six members.
Please subscribe at patreon.com/gospeltangents. For $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview uncut. So please subscribe at Patreon or on our website at gospeltangents.com as well. For our latest updates, please like our page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. And also check our Twitter updates at gospeltangents as well. Please subscribe on our Apple Podcasts page at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Or you can subscribe on your Android device. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.